I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. in the USA is Professor Elizabeth Acidu, who is a professor of economics at Howard University. She is also the president and founder of the Association of the Advancement of African Woman Economists, AWI. She's the former editor of the Journal of African Development. She's the former president of the African Finance Economic Association. She received a BSc in computer science and maths from the University of Ghana. She holds an MS in mathematics from the University of Illinois and her PhD in economics also from the University of Illinois. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Acidu, economics plays a massive role in the development and prosperity of countries. It serves as the foundation for understanding how societies are able to allocate scarce resources to meet their needs and desires, both in the public as well as the private sector. However, historically, economics has been a male-dominated field, and in an article that I read, I think it was from Ideas, they estimate that just 26% of economists are women. So firstly, please share with us what motivated you to pursue a career in economics.
Thanks for asking. As you rightly pointed out, economics plays an important role in all our lives. And I did start as, you know, wanting to be a math teacher. And so after graduating from the University of Ghana with a bachelor's degree in math and computer science, I came to the U.S. University of Illinois to pursue a graduate degree in math. And it was during that period, I believe in the early 90s, that Ghana's economy was struggling. The high inflation, there were shortages, et cetera, lots of instability. And that is how I got interested in economics, because I was trying to understand the root causes of what had occurred and how it could be fixed. And so after graduating with my master's in math, I pursued another master's in economics and then a PhD in economics from UIUC, University of Illinois.
And how did you do the transition going from Ghana to the US? Because quite different cultures and environments.
Yes, it was. Nothing prepared me for, the shock of leaving home for the first time. I remember, my first winter, I did start the program in January and there was a snowstorm and I spent about half of the semester just hibernating in class. I'll just go to class and sleep, right? But I did make some very good friends, right? And I also had a host family. And so that was very, very helpful in, adjusting to the new culture, new environment, et cetera. But in terms of the coursework, it was almost seamless because, the undergraduate program in math in Ghana, at least during my period time, was very rigorous. And so the graduate program in math was not that difficult. So that also gave me time to adjust to my new environment.
And talking about the different systems, I mean, one of the things that I found, and I grew up in the British education system, that you enter a stream quite early on in your life and it is focused and that's the route you take. And you have to make those decisions quite early on. Whereas my understanding in the US is that their systems are a lot more flexible. And if you see opportunities, you're able to explore them. Tell us about some of your experiences.
Right. So I was actually surprised by that because Ghana, as you partly mentioned, kind of followed at that time again the British system where you make the career decisions very early in your life and you decide to be like maybe a physician where you have no idea what really goes into, you know, being a physician. And there are other many, many professions that you are not even aware of. But like the US system is so flexible. I think my sense, especially like dealing with some of my students, a good example, I have a student who majored in economics and then economics was a minor. She was a dance major. And then after graduating, she did an internship and in the senator's office and did some work on, you know, U.S. healthcare, etc. And she decided she wanted to go to medical school. And she's a physician. Right. And there are many, many, many offside stories. And so I think one other advantage too I had was that the U.S. graduate program in economics is very rigorous in the sense it's very, very math-based. And so that also made the transition quite seamless, you know, for me.
And I hear what you're saying about these opportunities of flexibility, because you're right. What do you know about the world when you're 15 or 16, have had no experience, and you set or maybe someone has influenced your decision considerably on what they think is a good idea, but you don't actually know it for yourself.
Yeah.
Prof, you wear a lot of caps. And one of the things that I wanted to remark on is that you founded the Association for the Advancement of African Women Economists, whose mission is to build the capacity and enhance the scholarship of African women economists. And last year, January, there were 1,140 members representing 67 countries. That's incredible. Please tell us how this initiative began.
Thank you, and thanks for asking. So AWI was formed in 2013. March 2011, actually. And as you pointed out earlier, you know, economics has a gender problem, and it's pervasive. And so in 1973, the American Economic Association set up CSWEP. CSWEP is the Committee for the Status for Women in the Economics Profession. And the main mandate of CSWEP was to advance the scholarship and the professional development of women in the economics profession in the U.S. And then after that, I think 2 years after, the Canadians also set up the association, it's CWEN, Canadian Women's Economic Association. The Australians also set one up. UK has one. And the only developing country that has a women's organization at that time was China. China had just, you know, started. Now, I am part of CSWEP. And I played an important role as a mentor. They have mentoring programs. It's called Cement, that a colleague of mine, Don Aginta, introduced me to. And that is when I learned about the importance of mentoring and what mentoring can do, right? Its effect. And of course, I have benefited firsthand from mentors as well. And so that motivated me. That was the main source of motivation to set up something similar, because if, you know, the Western world, right, the developed world has an issue with, you know, women in economics, I'm sure at the situation on the continent, it's worse. And of course, there's no data as well. So I cannot, you know, support it with any data. And that is, you know, why I decided to form AWI.
And what are some of the activities that are undertaken by AWI? I'm assuming mentorship is one of them.
Mentorship is one of them. We organized sessions at conferences. And, you know, we have the mentorship. We had a visiting scholars program. I talked to you about that earlier, but it's falling through. It's on pause for now. A lot happened after COVID and we have not, you know, recovered, you know, completely. But these are the three main things that we do. The mentorship is an important piece. And with the, you know, organizing sessions at conference, I remember that our first international conference was at the Econometric Society conference in Uganda, and it was just fantastic. I met a young lady, and she was from South Asia. No, South Sudan. And that was the first time she had been outside the country. That was the first time she had attended an international conference. And it was so fantastic. You know, it's like, oh, you know, these are people that I read about from, like, for my classes, the textbook. And, you know, you're able to hear these, you know, renowned professors presenting their work, researchers. So, you know, these women leave these events very motivated, ready to work and take on the world. And yeah, so that's an important, some of the important things that we do.
Certainly, and professional networking is such an important component of career development. Mm-hmm. But saying that, it still seems to be an area where women have undeveloped their skills to a certain extent. Based on your experiences, how can women become more effective at building and nurturing their professional networks?
So that goes back again to the having an association like AWI, right? Because what happens is because there's not many of us, we tend to be isolated. And that makes it so difficult, right? Because you are not even aware of the opportunities out there. And so currently, for the past 3 years, we've been fortunate to get sponsorship funding from the World Bank. And we've been organizing, you know, mentoring programs. And it's just been so wonderful to see these young ladies, you know, improve on their skills, to get them out there. Like what I say is that we need to support each other. And that's exactly what we do. The most recent round, which it's going to start next month. We received over 300 applications, 350 applications. Unfortunately, we can support only 60. However, in addition to those selected for the workshop, we do run monthly webinars. We talk about the importance of networking. How do you network? How do you publish a paper? You know, what are sharing opportunities that are, you know, available, you know, out there? And so, yeah, you, that is one of the important things that AWI does, where we try to minimize the isolation. And of course, we have a lot of unique things that we deal with just because we are from the continent. Most of it is cultural, right? Yes. And so we also have those discussions as well.
Mm.
And, you know, family balancing, you know, work, family, etc. We talk about that as well, right? The balancing act, which is not trivial.
Some people call it the falling over act.
Yes, it is not trivial. And it's good. It feels, it's helpful to know that there are other women dealing with similar situations and also they share and how they're able to navigate, you know, their situations. I think that's very, very helpful.
You're reminding me of one of the conversations that we had with one of our doctors on the show, a medical doctor, and she spoke about this of making hard choices that she's got her commitment, she's got to be disciplined, otherwise she's not going to attain her qualification or pursue in her practice. And she said she had these rules in place, and as a result of it, she lost friends. She had challenges with the church because she wasn't conforming to the standard expectations of society. But if she did that, she wouldn't be able to achieve her goals and benefit herself and her family.
Yes, you know, that is correct. And I think the bottom line is being mindful of your circumstances, being mindful of the constraints that you have, and knowing that everybody's constraint is unique. Like as an economist, we talk about you are solving a constrained problem. So given your constraints, given the information that you have, how best can you achieve your goal, right? What path do you need to take? But you need to be very deliberate and mindful because you don't have my time. And of course you have an important difference or between myself and then my sisters on the continent is that, you know, I call it, I mean, like ground zero. Nobody knows me here, right? I can do whatever I want. I can go out, I wear jeans, I can wear shorts. It doesn't matter. But at home, it's very different. But the bottom line is, given the constraints you have, given your situation, it can be a family situation, how do you, and you want to achieve a certain goal. How do you attain that goal? Right. You need to think through it and come up with a plan. It can't be ad hoc.
Yeah. And what you're saying, it's unique to your circumstances. So
exactly.
Everybody's situation is different.
Exactly.
But how do you navigate to get to your goal? You've mentioned mentorship a couple of times in the conversation. Obviously, I think it's a very important part of being able to develop. In AWI, for instance, you're saying you had 300 odd applicants, but only 60 opportunities. For people who are seeking mentorship and they want to request a mentor, but they don't necessarily know how to go about it, what would be some of your tips on recommending the steps that they take, who they identify, what to ask?
That's a good question. So it depends on what you are looking for. It could be you are working on a research paper, right? And you need help formalizing the idea. Or it's you've read a paper and you don't understand the methodology that was employed in the paper, right? My recommendation is reach out, right? What I tell my students is, if you don't ask, then the default answer is no. That's with probability one. If you ask, there's a non-zero probability that you're going to get a response, and so you do it. And you just send out the emails. You know, 25 years ago when I was in grad school, I remember that was the time that the emails were being established. I remember Netscape. I graduated from the University of Illinois. So that's where the internet actually, that's where they started developing the internet. We tested it. It was happening. But now you Google, their emails are available, their affiliations have, you reach out to them. Most people respond, or some would respond, right? But it's worth trying. It's worth trying. And, you know, that's my advice to, you know, people, the young researchers. Just ask.
Yeah. I think you've given a bit of a mathematical response. If you don't send it, the answer is going to be zero because you haven't done anything.
Yes. Yeah. So it's an ask, and ask again. Keep knocking on doors, and at some point you get a break. I am a strong believer in that.
True, and it only takes one door. You just have to open one.
That's all you need.
Prof, you Someone who has certainly stepped out of her comfort zone in a lot of spheres, from geographical location to shifting subjects to developing this amazing network of women. From a leadership point of view, I consider leadership to be also an important dynamic, because it's a position of power, but it's also about being able to change the narrative, hear other voices, attend to their needs. Can you give us some advice about, well, for women who are aspiring to pursue leadership roles?
I don't know whether I have done it right, that I'm a good, leader, but the leadership roles that I have held, be it like the director of graduate studies and dealing with students, are we being the president of, AFIA, I see the people I work with as my mentees, right? And when I'm dealing with people, I take a holistic approach, right? So if I have a student, for example, I have a graduate student who is not doing well, they are not coming to meetings, they are not making progress on their research, I tend to, look deeper, even their personal life, because usually that is the cause. And so when I interact with people, I'm the kind of person, I have students coming to my house, they do laundry in my house, because I need to get to know them. Right, yes. And I think for me, that's how I take it. That's what I don't know whether that's, the best approach. But I find it very rewarding. And I know that I cannot touch every life, but then the few that I interact with, I try to make a difference, bearing in mind that there's a chain reaction, that if I'm able to have a positive impact on one person, this person has other people that she interacts with. And so for me, that's, that's my approach.
Great philosophy, and this sort of chain reaction movement, or pay it forward.
Yes.
As an alternative expression. In your opinion, how can we encourage more women to assume leadership positions? Or maybe it's about what people are fearful from, because sometimes people are reluctant to go into a role because they've manifested something about it, or they've had this perception that it doesn't look like me.
So I guess the question is, why do you want to be a leader? If you're able to answer that question, then you would do it.
So you're throwing the question back at me.
Yes. Why do you want to be a leader? Right. Do you want to make a difference? You want to make an impact? Right. If so, in what area? Is it through politics? Is it because, in a way, whatever, almost every role you play, if you're a primary school teacher, you are a leader, you are impacting children. If you're a physician, yes, you still have patients, you are probably working with nurses, etc. So as long as you have a clear objective, a clear role, right, then I think that decision would be comes easily to make.
And some of the things that you're saying is thinking as a purpose and a bigger picture element that is looking towards others, as opposed to what am I gaining out of this?
Exactly. Exactly. Because at the end of the day, I think leadership is about service. Right. And service is about sacrifice, and you have to give up something, right? Economics, we talk about opportunity cost, right? Yes. So what are you willing to give up? Right. And why? So that, I think that's the, that is the most important question. It is service, right? And if it's service, which area do you want to serve and how are you going to do it?
Thanks for sharing your insights onto that question. Sticking with the economics theme and maybe also about opportunity costs or opportunity gains, every year I look at the World Economic Forum's statistics on a report that they publish on the Gender Gap Index. And in 2024, they indicated that it would take 152 years to close the economic gender gap, which, if we think about it in generations, it could be great, 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 great grandchildren's lifetime. And in my opinion, that's really just not good enough. So given what you know, your wealth of experience, what would be the one thing that you feel could help change and accelerate the closure of these gaps?
Yeah, that report was, you know, quite depressing, right? Because, you know, the goal five of the Sustainable Development Goal is 2030 gender parity. And this is saying that post-2030, we're looking at maybe five generations down. And at the same time, some regions have done better than others. So let's talk about our favorite continent, right? What is going on in sub-Saharan Africa? And this is, you know, I'm working on a paper, so it's very timely. Let me spend a few minutes talking about that. For the region, as economists, we talk about the private sector being the engine of growth. And that applies to, you know, all countries, regardless of the level of development. But this is more critical for sub-Saharan Africa, right? Because we have a much more growing population. The government sector is being reduced for many reasons, and therefore entrepreneurship is very, very important. During my time, you graduate, you got a job, right? It's like from the government, right? There's not anymore. And so the role of the public sector now is very, very critical. So that means, and we're also looking at a continent where about two-thirds of the countries in sub-Saharan Africa have a gender imbalance. There are more women than men, 51-52% women than men. And so we cannot afford to have huge gender inequality. So I'm working on a paper. We are looking at access to finance by small businesses. So the data is about, we have about 135,000 firms. We are looking at six regions. Okay. So all developing countries. And the firms were, one question was, to what extent is access to finance an obstacle for your business, right? And we also have information about firms that have some like female ownership and then all male. Okay. We find that in South Asia, Middle East and North Africa, East Central, Europe and Central Asia, East Asian Pacific, and Latin America and Caribbean, these five regions, there's no gender gap. In sub-Saharan Africa is the only region where we have the gender gap. And it doesn't matter whether we look at manufacturing, we look at small businesses, we look at medium-sized businesses, we look at the service sector. It doesn't matter. There's a big gap.
Why?
And then we ask another question. It's like, okay, does it matter if, like in countries where they have so-called like gender equality, right? So measured by countries that, for example, have more women in parliament, like South Africa, does it reduce the gap? And the answer is no. Right. And so I'm still working on the paper, and I'm everything I press, like, we can't. So I can't even come up with a policy recommendation to reduce the gap. And I'm like, it must be something cultural. So I don't know. That is, you know, I don't have an answer to that question, but we cannot afford to have that happen, right? Businesses need finance in order to grow, to invest, to expand, right? To employ people. Women-owned businesses employ more women. And we know what happens when women are empowered. It affects their children. They are more educated. They are healthier, right? Yeah. And so the policy recommendation is to pay attention. Make that conscious effort to help female-owned businesses.
Think that there's some systemic issues?
It is very systemic. That's why the response, the policy responses, they have to be very deliberate in addressing this issue.
Well, Prof. Asidu, I think we're going to have to revisit you when that paper is written and you've
I will be happy
dug
to
into
talk
the
about
doctor.
That. Yeah.
One question that I ask all my guests on the show who've made tremendous achievements in their respective disciplines is about some of the factors they feel have contributed to their success. Tell us about some of yours.
Oh, that's an important question. A couple, of course, you know, my parents, my mom being a teacher, had played an important role in my life, and just having a supportive family, especially, you know, my husband, and living a life of gratitude, being thankful for the small things, just a gift of life. Of, you know, 2018, maybe 2018 to about 2022 was a super difficult period for me, my family, etc. But just living a life of gratitude. I'm still here, so there's a purpose for me. You know, I still am able to pay my bills. I have a roof over my head. I have a good job. And yeah, and my, you know, my students also, and of course my children keep me humble, right? And a lot of patience.
Those are interesting qualities. And, you know, with this question, we already spoke about everybody having unique constraints or conditions. Everybody has their own answer and flavor. And yours are, you know, speaking about aspects of patience, of gratitude, of family. It's very a very grounded sentiment that
Thank you
convey. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the pivotal moments in your life when you were growing up.
So, growing up in Ghana, you know, I've mentioned I'm a math major. I was very good in math. Part of it is like my mom, right, worked with me every, you know, almost every day. We had a math session until she got to a point where she could not help me anymore. And fortunately, my brother, Daniel, you know, took over. And, but I was not good in the remaining subjects, like French, no matter how hard I tried, I could get like maybe 5%, I guess, completely bombed in. But so the British system where you select a, like an area or a major very early worked to my advantage, because if I were to take all the other subjects, I don't think I would have done well. And also grew up in a culture where if you are good in math, the assumption is you must be very smart, okay? And, but at the same time, there were not many women studying math. I remember at the, my freshman year at the University of Ghana, that was the year that they decided to admit more students in math. Previously, it was maybe, I don't remember the number, but my batch, there was about 100 of us, and I was the only female. The only female in math, the only female in computer science, the only female in that. So on the one hand, you get a lot of attention, but it could also be terrifying. And that was, especially like the first semester, or the first term, we call it, because it was like three terms. We didn't have a semester system then. Was very, very challenging for me, you know, just navigating a new campus, being in class with, you know, over 99 or 90 guys, being the only woman, and was challenging. But, you know, after a while, you know, I did manage to adjust.
The personal challenges, I would also imagine that you are there representing women, because they're not used to seeing women in their field, and
yes,
understanding, yeah, that, you know what, women can do this.
Right. So it was interesting because some of my friends, right, it was more like, no, Lizzie does not understand that, she just memorizes, right? And one reason was that when I did not understand something, I would ask. And so I was talking to each of them, accumulating the knowledge, and we'll take the exam and I'll do well, right? So there's also that part where, I don't know whether it's not having an ego, right? It didn't matter if I don't understand something, I would ask. Of course, I come across as stupid, but it didn't matter to me because at the end of the day, look at me and where I am, right? Yes. So those were fun moments. And, you know, I had made very, very good friends, and, you know, I'm still in touch with most of them. Several of them, I should say, because there were 100 of us.
Those are good lessons, having the humbleness and humility.
Yes, yes.
And lastly, as we close out our chat today, can you share a few words of inspiration or motivation for girls and women who are listening to us?
You know, just be my advice, and this is what I tell my daughter all the time. Resilience is important in life. And at the same time, you don't allow anyone to tell you what you are capable of doing or what you are not. Because 10 years from now, you may not even remember those people. So you need to stay focused. You don't give up. And very soon, sooner than later, you will get a break. But you cannot afford to give up. And you dream big. You dream big. And keep working.
Thank you. Those are great words. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Professor Elizabeth Asidu, who is a professor of economics at Howard University, and she is also the president and founder of the Association for the Advancement of African Women Economists.